just as a review for, in case you haven't been with us all of these weeks of this quarter, we are studying from the book of Romans, and Paul, in the first eight chapters of the book, lays the foundation for righteousness. And really, it's, you might think of the doctrine of righteousness as what he has laid there in those first eight chapters. And many people will divide this book into the first eight chapters are doctrinal matters, the chapters 9 through 11, which I've been teaching. Tom taught the first eight chapters, and I've been teaching the section dealing with the Jews and the Gentiles' relationship in the in this early church. Then chapter 12 begins what some people would call practical Christianity or practical applications of righteousness. But folks, it's doctrine. It's all doctrine because it's what we are supposed to be doing as Christians. It's chapter 12, though, does have a definite emphasis on exhortation of the church. He is trying to get the church in Rome to understand all of their responsibilities or obligations to each other and things of that nature. And it's written in the sense of these are commands. You know, if you were an English teacher, say it's written in the imperative voice. So this is not something that is written in the sense that, oh, it's a good thing to do. These verses are written in the form of commands. And we're going to look at the text is the first 16 verses of chapter 12. Given the speed at which I usually teach the content, we may get the first two done. But the text is the first 16. But we're going to spend some time looking closely at what we do have time for today. And then the rest of the time will be yours to study, I guess, individually. I'm prepared to teach all 16 verses, but I don't think I'm going to get that far, depending on how things go in the class. But I think the time that we spend discussing things is important for us. So let's begin. So if someone were to walk in from the community, what should they see in this congregation? What should a Christian look like to them? Yeah, okay. It should look like. Okay, what do we look like then, Pat? What would distinguish us from the person that they would meet on the street? That they might just meet on the street. Who might also be a Christian, but we'll say. Okay, love for one another. Okay. Yeah, Neil? That's what you get. Anything else that would distinguish us? Friendly? Okay. Yeah, Bill? Okay, so Bill says that it's someone that's always looking for ways that they can help someone else. And, of course, within the body, of course, but also outside of the body as well. They should see, I think what Bill has described is a genuine interest in the well-being of others. Would that be fair? A genuine interest is one that spurs you to action, right? I mean, we can have that superficial interest, and it may not spur us to action. Since Bill started, I'm going to let him follow up. Yeah, and that compassion deals with their physical needs, but it also deals with their spiritual needs as well, doesn't it? We should have compassion for those who are outside of Christ. And we should have that desire to influence them in such a way that they will want what we have. And some of Katie and then Lulu. Okay. Very good. And Lulu?
I'm just going to say that they might notice how quickly we come over to grieve them.
Oh, yeah? And what would that tell them? Lulu says that they might notice how quickly we greet visitors. What would that tell them? That they are important. You are important to me. Now, does everyone want to feel important? Of course. And so that's one of the, Ms. Josephine, yeah. And I'll give you an example. And I wasn't here Wednesday night. I was out of town Wednesday night. But we have a student from our department who's sitting down in the classroom right now. She came Wednesday night. She said she felt so at home that she came back this morning. Now, so that's, you know, I commend all of you or any of you who may have had some influence on that because, you know, she felt like she was important when she came here. And so that's a good thing. So why would that, what we've just described, be different from those who are out there that they, you might run into on the street? Do they care? Okay, usually, you know, if we were to describe the contrast with the people of the world, it's me first. And then, if I have any time left over, I might focus a little bit on you. And understand, I'm not saying that everyone out there that's outside of the church is evil, necessarily, but they aren't what the Gospels would say would be perfect or complete. They're lacking in something along the way. And the church should be such that people see the difference. Yeah, Terry? Okay. So we're interested in careers, and career is our ultimate goal. Or, not we, they. The people who are focused on the world are interested in getting somewhere with their career and not so much in getting somewhere with God. And that somewhere, it should be our ultimate goal. Tom? Christianity draws on strength from God. Otherwise, you have to depend on yourself or, you know, maybe another person or two. And what do we know about people? They will let you down. Many times people will let you down. And so we wonder, we should not wonder why there's despair out in the world. Because when you rely on people, eventually, people will let you down. When you rely on God, you're not going to be let down. Okay? Yeah, Mankind does not have, as Katie says, all of the knowledge that God has. We may think we're really smart. And we may think that we've got all the answers for somebody's situation. And by chance, sometimes we do. And maybe that's the dangerous part, because then we get to thinking we know more than we really know. But every once in a while, we may stumble on the right answer. But God doesn't stumble on the right answers. He has them. And so so that's the difference in relying on people and relying on God. Well, Christians should be thought about as being a transformed people. Shouldn't something change? Shouldn't we be changed when we obey Christ, obey the gospel? And hopefully, some of the things that we've talked about this morning already is what a Christian should look like, are the ways that we need to be changed. Well, Paul has a little bit more to say about that in the book of Romans. Let's the first two verses. Dale, would you read verses 1 and 2 of Romans 12? Okay, there's a word in there in the first verse that says, he says, I beseech you, therefore. And whenever you see that word, that means it's tying it back to something he has said previously. And he is talking about all of the foundation that he has laid for the doctrine of righteousness. It's because of this need for righteousness that Paul is begging, literally, the people. You know, that word beseeching, I beseech you, is not just asking. What kind of a connotation do you get from that? I beseech you. No? Yeah, it's urgent. It's pleading with people. Begging. It's earnestly begging. It's not someone that just has a passing interest saying, I'm going to ask you to do this. It's, I really need you to do this. It's, please, will you help me? Or will you do this for me? And it's not for, in this case, it's not for Paul, it's for God. And so right away, we see the urgency of what he's about to say to the church in Rome. He's not asking them, he's begging them to do this. Then the mercies of God. What would that mean to you? Why would you do this? He says, by the mercies of God. We need mercy. Lulu says we need mercy. And we have received mercy. It reminds them of God's compassion for them, doesn't it? God's compassion for them caused him to send Jesus to die for our sins. And it's the mercies of God that have caused them to become Christians. So so it's no small reason. The love that God had for them is what caused salvation to be possible. So if God loves us that much, shouldn't we want to do just a little bit for him? No, we should want to do a lot for him. So, that's, he's laying the foundation here. He asked them to be a living sacrifice. What does that mean? Okay, denying oneself. Yes, Marilyn. Active. Okay, putting other people's needs before your own. You know, a living sacrifice. The Jewish Christians were familiar with sacrifices, weren't they? They weren't familiar with living sacrifices, though, because, you know, the sacrifice, the person that was sacrificed, the thing that was sacrificed was no more, right? It was dead. And so there's a contrast here of being a living sacrifice. Neil? And so it's an ongoing sacrifice is what they're saying. Nathan?
I think there's also an issue of the totality of the statement. When you look at sacrifices to God throughout the scriptures, they were always to be the best. You know, and I think if you look at this, a living sacrifice, that literally in our life we give our very best to God in all things.
Okay. Nathan said, if you couldn't hear, Nathan said that it implies that we're giving our best. And, you know, the phrase that follows that would certainly bear that up, wouldn't it? That's holy and acceptable to God. It's ongoing. Living sacrifice, you know, the old animal sacrifices, the sacrifice was given and the animal was no more. It died. A living sacrifice implies that we give ourselves, and then we give ourselves, and then we give ourselves again. And it continues. And there is no stop to all of this. And the reason is because the sacrifice that was given for us goes on and on and on, doesn't it? Tom? Yes.
So it wasn't just a one time once a year. It was, what's interesting is when you brought that sacrifice, you killed it. The priest put his hands on it, but you killed it. So for your sin, you were, like I said, always gave the best for your sin. And so now what he's saying is there's no more physical sacrifice. Christ has done that. But now there's this living sacrifice. It's even greater.
And it was something that you had to do every time that you. That there was sin in your life. Yeah. Lulu, and then Kate.
Partly it's doing things that are difficult for you to do. You just do all the easy things, then that can really be the sacrifice. And of course, no matter what the difficult things are, they still don't match up. But at least trying to go in the right direction.
Yeah, is it a sacrifice if I gave, you know, time that I, you know, really didn't plan to use anyway else? Malachi has something to say about that, doesn't he? Katie? We'll get back to Malachi in just a minute. Yeah, we give up those things of the world that we may have used to have done. And we take on the teachings and the life that Christ said that we should maintain. That's what we're that's what we're trying to do with it, and that's part of our living sacrifice. But there are other things too that I think that we need to be thinking about too. Marilyn? Okay. Sacrifices are supposed to, and again, there was a problem in the Old Testament time, and Malachi addressed that problem about exactly that type of thing. Lloyd? Yeah, our sacrifices weren't, the sacrifices in the Old Testament were not just done haphazardly, just any way that people decided that it was okay for them to do that. There had to be a specific procedure. You know, God has always told man what he expected of him, hasn't he? And, you know, as parents, some of us can relate to this. If I tell my child what I want them to do, don't you expect them to do it that way and not make a decision to do it some other way? We ought to be able to relate to that. That's just the way that, you know, that's what people expect. And, you know, if your child thinks, well, but Dad, I had a better idea. I had a better idea. I thought that I could do it this way and it would work just as well. And then it doesn't work out very well. And you say, aha, I told you so. If you had listened to your dad or you listened to your mom, then you wouldn't have done this incorrectly and everything would have worked out all right. Somehow we separate that whole attitude with our attitude towards serving God, don't we? Or many people do. So that it's getting a little bit away from the sacrifice, Neil, but it has it pertains to it. But at the same time, aren't we supposed to give our best? Aren't we supposed to give? Doesn't God expect our best efforts, whatever they might be? Doesn't he expect our best efforts and not whatever time we have left over? And, you know, we've talked about this many times about service to God and how much that we are willing to commit as far as service to God. Well, let's go to Malachi and look at what Malachi had to say in the Old Testament. It's verse chapter 1 in Malachi. You can turn to that. Jim, while we're turning, we'll look. And Malachi addresses this in chapter 1, starting at verse 6 and reading through verse 8. Would someone read that, please, for me?
A son honors his father, and a servant his master. Then if I am a father, where is my honor? And if I am a master, where is my respect? Says the Lord of hosts to you, O priests who despise my name, but you say, how have we despised thy name? You are presenting defiled food upon my altar. But you say, how have we defiled thee? In that you say, the table of the Lord is to be despised. But when you present the blind a sacrifice, is it not evil? And when you present the lame and the sick, is it not evil? Why not offer it to your governor? Would he be pleased with you, or would he receive you kindly, says the Lord of hosts?
Okay, they were offering not their best. The blind, or the blind animals, the lame animals, whatever. And he said, just give that to the tax collector. See what they think about that. Tell IRS that this is all I've got left for you. And see what the Internal Revenue Service has to say about that. So, you know, we wouldn't treat them that way. But, you know, this is what I've got left over for you. And so, you know, the idea is that in order to be holy and acceptable to God, it has to be our best effort. And I'm not necessarily talking about our money. I'm talking about our effort, what we do for God. And let's don't do things half-heartedly and just enough to get by. Are things along those nature. Let's do things, let's put our heart into it. We talk about that all the time in things that we do out there at work or at play. I hear coaches talk to athletes all the time about, you know, your heart's got to be in the game. You've got to put your heart into what you're doing. Well, doesn't that apply to Christianity as well? So he says that we are to present our bodies a living sacrifice. So what does that mean to us? Yeah, Nathan?
I think that's a contrast. You know, he's already in chapter 6 talked about presenting your bodies to unrighteousness and sin. And here is the contrast to that statement, that you present your bodies to that which is holy and acceptable to God.
Okay. It's the contrast that we have. So many times we think about that as, well, that's my command to maintain my health. Right? Is that what, you know, I'm supposed to maintain a good, healthy body so I can present that? Are we supposed to do that? Yes, of course we are. But it's not just about our physical health when we present our bodies. Are there things that can enter our bodies that are not holy, not acceptable to God? Think about what we watch on TV, what we hear, where we go. You know, your mind is a part of your body and influences what we do. And we can corrupt our minds to the point that God's not pleased with us. So, while, yes, we want to maintain our health, but we also want to guard all of those things that might influence us, guard against all those things that might influence us incorrectly for God. So, Paul is beginning, he says, this is your reasonable service. Now, given what God has done for us, is there anyone here who thinks that doing these things that we've talked about this morning is just not reasonable? Can we stand and say, no, that's just too much to ask? Because all he's asking for us to do is to live that life that will actually be good for us. You know, God's laws aren't things that are contrary to what's good for man. The things that he asks us to do are all things that are good for us, aren't they? And so it's not unreasonable for God to ask us to serve him that way. Okay, so we only have to do what we believe is reasonable, right? Because it says that the reasonable service, well, isn't reasonable in my mind. you know, that whole principle, that's right, Josephine, that whole principle of exercise doesn't just apply to your physical body. You also have to exercise your mind, and you have to exercise your spiritual growth as well. And we do that with our study, with our prayer, with our service to God. So there are a lot of ways that we can exercise in order to get stronger. You know, the way to get stronger is to exercise. That's a good point. And we can exercise our spiritual bodies too, can't we? And should not we be interested in doing that even more so than our physical bodies? Okay, first two verses, and we've got 5 minutes before the first bell. So I knew this was going. Well, we haven't even got to verse two yet. He asks us not to be conformed to the world. Can Christians be conformed to the world? Okay, and what are some ways that Christians can be conformed to the world? Dottie? Yeah, I've done something, so that should be enough. Not wholeheartedly. So I've done something, so that, you know, half-heartedly done that. Other ways. Selfishness. Yeah, the world is selfish. I'm number one. If I'm in the world, I'm number one. That's who I'm concerned about. Other ways. Okay, yeah, we can say, well, everybody else doesn't go to church. They don't go to worship. So why should, you know, it's okay if I don't do this all the time. And sometimes it's not a total break. Let's face it, folks. It's not a drastic break from Christianity in many cases. It's that little molding, conforming to the world and moving a little bit to one direction, a little bit more and a little bit more. And sooner or later, they don't recognize us as Christians anymore. Now, Harold? Okay, yeah, all of those things. Worship, there are a lot of things that we can worship other than God. And God calls those our idols, doesn't he? And he knows, we know how he feels about idols. We know how he feels about our idols. God tells us back in the early books of the Old Testament, as he gave his law, that he said, I'm a jealous God. And I'm not going to put up with you worshiping other gods. And he demonstrated that fact over and over and over to Israel. It should be very much ingrained in our minds. But somehow we miss the point sometimes. Bill? And I'm not sure that time has not already come. I think that we're seeing those kinds of demands. You know, and it's probably not exactly what Paul had in mind, but as he was talking to in this particular passage. But is it possible for the church to be conformed to the world? It's already happened, Gene says. Yeah, don't we see evidence of that? And what's the usual argument? We can bring more people in. You know, we can attract more people if we're more like the other religions, other religious bodies. And we'll have a huge number of members in this congregation. But if it's no longer the Lord's church, have we done anything of value? we have actually done a great deal of harm. Ozzie and then Nathan. Yeah, and we don't say that in pride or anything like that. It's just, folks, that's just the fact. It's not being puffed up and say, you know, we're so much better than the rest of the world. It's not about who's better and who's, it's who is following God. I had a faculty member who was coming back from a funeral of one of our, relative of one of our other faculty members, and he is Buddhist. And he said, there are all these different denominations, religious denominations. He said, which one is the best? And he was sincerely trying to learn. And my answer was, the one that follows what the Bible teaches. The church that follows what the Bible teaches is the best one. And I said, not only that, it's the only one that's acceptable to God. And so, yeah, it's possible to be conformed. Yeah, Nathan?
You know, as we think about being conformed, it's a lot like when I think about a boat. You know, so I mean, we're called to not be of the world, but we are in the world. You know, it's like the boat sitting in the water. The water is always trying to find ways in. And it does. And no boat is waterproof, so to speak. And they all have, you know, you have to keep getting the water out. But if you stop, you know, in our lives, if we do not constantly monitor to make sure that we're not being conformed to the world, then it'll slowly and inexorably take over our lives. Just like if you do not maintain a boat, it will eventually sink because you'll have more water in it than you will have air.
Yeah.
And you'll become just like it. You'll sink.
Yeah, the water will leak in and it will overtake the boat. And there is no saving the boat when that happens. We have to be careful that we are not transformed into something different than what Christ wanted us to be transformed into. We are to be transformed, though, and transformation is a major change. It's not just a little tweaking. It's not just changing a little bit of what we do. Now, and many Christians, you know, I'm sure, you know, people say, well, I grew up in the church and I haven't, you know, so I didn't have to really change that much. You know, I would suggest that you probably changed a whole lot more than you thought you did. But it's a major change. It's a change in your mindset. It's a change in your attitude. It's a change in your desire for service. Those are not real small little tweaks. Those are major changes. And if we don't have that mindset change, then we haven't made the transformation that we need to. We need to show that life that will prove the will of God. And Paul says these things about the will of God in verse 2. He says it's good, meaning that it's best for us. God's will is what's really best for us. Sometimes we miss that point, I think, sometimes. We think that, oh, the sin is the pleasure. Folks, sin just brings pain, eventually, to somebody. It's not good for you. The life that is good for you is the life that God has prescribed for us. He says it's acceptable, and that would be that which is pleasing to God, which we've talked about this morning already. And he also says it's perfect, or it's complete. It's all that we need to bring us to that goal that we should have as Christians, and that goal is salvation. So it's the will of God is everything that we need. It's good, it's acceptable, and it's perfect, or complete. How can we do this? Well, something that we don't like to think about. We have to surrender ourselves. We have to give up those things. We have to give up our will. And that's hard for us to do because we have this innate sense of that, you know, I have these rights and I should be able to do these things. We have to give those things up and surrender to the will of God. Now, what we didn't get to this morning are verses 3 through 16, and a very quick thing. I'm obviously not going to get to all of those, but a couple of points. Christian living is characterized by humility. That's one of the themes of some of these verses, that we have to be thinking about ourselves as being humble servants of God. And we aren't to be proud, and we aren't to project that whole image that we're so much better than everyone else, because we know what comes before a fall. Pride comes before a fall. And then in verses 9 through 16, really deals with qualities of Christians, how Christians will treat each other. And I would urge you this week to read through those more than once and say to yourself, does this really describe me? And read them very carefully and very critically for yourself. So, and say, is this the life? Would my friends say, yes, this is Jim? Would people that see me say, yeah, this is him? And I will tell you, I have a lot of things in there that I need to work on. But if I do that, I know I'm going to be a much better servant of God. You know, it's important that we do. What does a Christian look like? Getting back to the beginning, they're busy serving God. They put others above themselves. They show a lot of goodness and absence of evil. They show a lot of brotherly love, and they're fervent in their service. The other word that we used a couple of weeks ago, zealous. It's like their service to God is a consuming thing for them. I would suggest to you that's what Christians look like, and that's what we want to look like as the church here in Cary. Told you at the beginning we wouldn't get very far. That's okay. I think we had some good discussion about what we want to be. So Terry is going to be teaching next week. I believe it's chapter 14 that you need to be looking at for next week. Excuse me, chapter 13. There's a blue BMW in the parking lot that has the lights on.